Welcome everyone to the latest first episode in 2018 of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined with Seth Wintraub.
Hi, Fred.
Seth,
staying warm over
there?
Big
news this week.
Yeah, good news is that I have a...
You supposedly had a better microphone, right?
Yes, a much better microphone. Hopefully the sound is coming through clearer and there's no fuzziness. $200, Rode Podcaster. Can't beat that.
Yeah, we're getting almost professional right now. So if anything, the audio-only version should be perfect or almost perfect in terms of audio quality since it's recorded independently from the live stream. We might still have some issue with the live stream itself because it's on Google Hangout and it might be some connection issues. But if you're listening audio-only, there should be no issue right now. And this week, we have plenty to talk about. First week of 2018, it started out big with the... Tesla releasing its delivery result and a little update on Model 3 production ramp up. So we're going to start out with that this week, but we have plenty of other things to talk about, including how electric cars react in extreme cold. I did an article on that this week to try to combat a little bit some anti-EV propaganda that came out recently. And also I had an experience with a road trip with my car in the extreme cold last weekend, so that just the timing was great.
Yeah, and it's been plenty cold all over the East Coast and Midwest, so I'm sure a lot of our listeners have also been getting a little experience in the extreme cold in their EVs.
Yeah, we're getting some good data from electric cars owners at this point. And plenty of other thing to discuss to you about Tesla and other electric vehicles. But starting out with the deliveries, Tesla released the result on Wednesday, and as we expected, the deliveries were record total deliveries from Model S and X, including Model 3. But that wasn't really what grabbed the headlines from that press release. It was mostly about the Model 3 production rate, which Tesla said was over 1,000 per week, extrapolated from the last 3 days. So I don't know if you remember from the last podcast, but that's exactly what I predicted was going to happen.
It's on the record.
Yeah, it's on the record. If you go back and listen to the last podcast, I told you guys a few days before Tesla made the release, they're gonna achieve the best production rate the last few days of the week, and they're gonna be able to extrapolate that into a weekly production rate. Because we've been just talking about weekly production rates for months now, so that's like our baseline. If we're talking about Model 3 production, we're talking how many they're gonna do per week, because their goals were 5,000 per week. Originally by the end of 2017, and 10,000 per week at some point in 2018. But of course, that didn't happen at all. They are at about 1,000 per week now, if you extrapolate from their best possible production rate in the last few days of the year. And they are pushing the 5,000 goals per week from the end of Q1 to the end of Q2. So that went from December 2017 to the end of Q1 2018, now the end of Q2. 2018, and the exit rate in Q1, and instead of 5,000, they are now guiding 2,500. So they're going to move from 1,000 to 2,500 throughout the quarter.
Right, and that's obviously significantly down from the original estimates. However, it's improving over the last two quarters.
Yeah, we were even discussing that in the Electric Newsroom this week, to give you some background. So one of our contributors, Jameson, was suggesting, because we knew they were gonna be a miss, of course, because the way that the quarter progressed and everything, we've been reporting it, and even the last few days before they reported the numbers, we got an update on the VIN numbers that were registered with the federal agency, and it gave us pretty much the exact number. We said it was just going to be around 2,000 units produced in 2017, and they ended up producing 1,500 plus it was a little more than 1500. 1500 was what they delivered, right?
Yeah, and they had a lot in inventory as well.
Producing was 2000. No, that's MLS. What was the production number?
I want to say it was between 1500 and 2000. It's like 1700 or something.
Yeah, 2400. That's so 24. Yeah, we said just over 2000. It was actually closer to 3000 because that's 2400 for Q4. They were 260 also in Q3. So that makes sense. So we knew it was going to be a miss, just not by how much exactly. But we knew for sure that the mainstream media will come down hard on Tesla on this one, like, oh, they missed delivery talk and everything. So Jameson suggested, instead of going with the actual number of car delivered, we'll just go with the percentage increase from Q3 to Q4, which is like a several thousand percent increase in deliveries and in production number. But
I don't know. When we do that, we get called Tesla whores, so...
Yeah, we got Tesla wars apparently, but it's still correct, and that's a problem. Of course, it's disappointing that there are another delays, and we haven't seen that translated to different delivery timelines yet for Model 3 reservation holders. Tesla even sent out a new batch of configuration of invitation for configure the Model 3. I know that someone in the room right now even got one.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, I got two actually.
Well, yeah, your two cars got their invite.
Yeah, so one, I was supposed to get one earlier and one later, but they both came at the same time. So, because the car I really want is a 220 mile, because we have the Model X with lots of miles. The car I really want is a 220 mile all wheel drive version. But that, of course, is going to be the last car out, and you don't even know how much that's going to cost. But, you know, every step along the line, like, of course, I want to try to drive a Model 3 as soon as possible. So I got the black Model X, Model 3, just standard. So hopefully that comes out quick and I can get that in New York, you know, by the end of the month. Then theoretically, I'll sell that and I'll get the 220 because...
With all-wheel drive.
Oh, well, you know what? I was just thinking about that. I'd only have two reservations, and then I get put to the back of the line. So maybe I should just keep this one until the all-wheel drive one comes out. But then...
Oh, okay. You were thinking of ordering sooner than all-wheel drive.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a hassle. I mean, so one thing that's kind of upsetting is that, you know, Tesla's clearly trying to make a bunch of money right now because... That, you know, they're only selling the higher end version of that, and they've done this in everything they launch. And I get it, like, you know, you need to, you know, the cost of building a vehicle kind of starts really high and then comes down, so you kind of need to recoup those costs as soon as you can. And, you know, obviously Tesla needs to get paid and paid soon. But the company has bottlenecks, and the bottlenecks appear to be in the battery department. And, you know, you can make a lot more battery. You can make a lot more 220-mile batteries than you can 310 batteries with the same amount of cells. So to me, it's a little frustrating that they could be producing, you know, around 50% more vehicles, you know, on a cell basis, and getting them into more hands. But, you know, whatever. I understand. But as somebody who's got a long-range Tesla already, needs, you know, an around-town car, I really would rather get a 220 and pay $9,000 less.
Yeah, that makes sense because there's the big difference just per battery pack from about 50 kilowatt hours to 75. So just two cars and 275, and you can make another... 50 if you just use a smaller battery pack. But yeah, right now they're trying to recoup the big investment that they made in the production line. It's just because right now they're probably not making any money even at 1,000 per week.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I think last quarter they guided that they think about starting making a gross profit on it starting at 5,000 a week. So that's I think that's their bigger concern right now for them. But the new battery pack is coming soon anyway. If your concern in the U.S. is to get the tax credit, which is a big, pretty big concern, because as soon as they get $5,000 a week, then it's they're gonna hit the 200,000 phase out period very quickly. Then they have only two quarters after that. Well, the current quarters plus a full one. So,
but then it drops to 3750, which isn't horrible but significant. And then
yeah, it's horrible in the grand scheme of thing, but if you already have the reservation, you're already in line, everything, you want to maximize that, because it's pretty much an investment. You put $2,000 for almost 2 years at this point, so you want to that to have meant something,
right?
Like, and if for the U.S., that's often the federal tax, the federal tax rate that it meant. But yeah, that's what we were saying. 1,000 per week at this point, not that bad. At least they are, you know, that the production line is not just like by hand. It can be 1,000 per week. And if you go back to Model S and Model X, I'm playing devil's advocate here because right now everybody's freaking out about the delay. If you go back to the Model S and Model X production line, early production ramp up, they got to 1,000 a lot faster than they did for S and X. So that's a good news here. So Tesla is definitely getting better at producing, at doing production ramp up for their production lines. So we'll keep a close eye over the next few months on the 2,500 per week target. But right now it's where we're at. And like we said, this week they open up to pretty much every market in the U.S. Like we got reports from the state of Washington to Florida and all the way up the East Coast and some of the Midwest. A bunch of people in Chicago got an invite.
Yeah, I think it was people who ordered before the event on the West. So all over the U.S., people who ordered before the event, and then people in California who ordered like at the event. You know, like while Elon was talking,
but still, current Tesla owner too.
Oh yeah,
I didn't see anyone that wasn't a Tesla owner either.
Yep.
So it's not just the timeline of the reservation, but also it looks like Tesla is still keeping to sticking to the priority to current Tesla owners. That should go away pretty soon, I think, because Tesla already had a lot of Tesla owners when they had an event anyway, but probably less than 100,000 or so.
Right.
And it's not like everyone ordered one anyway, so. But other than that, what we had this week, sticking to the Model 3, we posted an article earlier today about, I went to the Tesla road trip meetup in Montreal. So if you're not aware of it, one of the very first non-Tesla employee, a Model 3 owner, Yo-Yo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I know his first name, it's spelled U-U, but it's pronounced Yo-Yo. He was one of the first Model 3 owner, took delivery on the 23rd. He was also one of the first to receive a configuration. And right away, he took off on a cross-country road trip. And what's really special about that road trip is that he decided to organize meetups all the way coast to coast, now in Canada, and he's gonna exit Canada to go back to the U.S. through Detroit, I think, today or tomorrow. And those meetups are one of the rare opportunity for a lot of reservation holders or just Tesla fans to see the Model 3 in person and to even test drive it. So he organized a way for people to test drive. That's actually how he financed part of the trip, by having people pay, I think it's about $10, or a little bit higher if there's a lot of demand for it, to test drive the vehicle. And with that, he financed all his supercharger stuff, because I think he's already over $1,000 in supercharger cost.
That's interesting. That's $1,000 in superchargers. Those aren't terribly expensive, I guess, when you're crossing the U.S., you're using a lot of electricity, especially in the winter.
Yeah. The he's already at 11,000 kilometers, so if you do the math. But he also charged at destination charger too, because he's trying to stop at hotels that are a partner in the destination charger program. So that's that can make a difference, because those are generally free to use. But yeah, it's not an inexpensive trip between hotels and supercharger costs and everything. But he went up the East Coast. He went all the way to Quebec City. Then he drove down from Quebec City to Montreal. And Montreal was the biggest meetup to date. There were well over 50 people. Well, actually, it broke down into two different meetups in Montreal, because he stopped at Autoprix in Saint-Léonard in Montreal to give him a chance to clean the vehicle a little. And he did an interview there with the former environment minister in Quebec, Daniel Breton. Then he drove down to the official Montreal meetup, and that's what is it's impressive here, because that meetup was delayed by like 4 hours or something like that. It was supposed to be at 5 first, then it was at 7, then at 8, then it ended up being at 9:30, then it changed location two times, from the Tesla store to the Tesla supercharger in Côte-Vertu, and still like over 50 people showed up. It was freezing cold outside. The Côte-Vertu supercharger as a carport, but you're still outside and it's extremely cold, and still over 50 people was there, and he arrived like a rock star, people cheering and everything, seeing the Model 3 for the first time and seeing a Yo-Yo there. And he gave pretty much everyone there the opportunity to get inside the car and to play a little bit with the UI and take pictures with the vehicle, get a chance of get a feel of the seats and the cargo space. And a few of them had a chance to go on the test drive if they already had signed up for it. And I got a chance also to talk to him about his experience today, because he's probably the Model 3 owner that has logged the most mileage in the Model 3 outside of Tesla and Tesla employees. We got their cars early. I think it makes sense. I didn't see anyone else to date have more than 10,000. He's at 11. I think he just crossed 12,000 kilometers today.
Wow!
So he has a lot of experience with a car.
Yeah. So what has the experience been? Is he, you know, is the trunk latch working great? Is the are the panels aligned perfectly?
Well, he didn't seem too concerned about the panel the panel alignment quality. His biggest complaint has to do with the UI itself. So that's something that has come up a few times in the past few months. Tesla just hasn't completed the Model 3 user interface to date. A few applications were adapted to Model 3 and then the new computers and the horizontal screen instead of a vertical like Model S and Model 3. But it's far from completed, and there's still a lot of bugs. But that's something that Tesla can at least fix with software updates, and we already have seen a few updates to fix some minor bugs, but there's a lot of work to be done yet. In terms of hardware, like real problem with the car, his main issue was with the charge port, the charge port for the charger. And he cannot open it automatically. He needs to open it manually. And it always shows that it's open, so which is why you can't open it automatically, since the system.
So, like the sensor is probably bad or stuck or something.
Yeah, apparently it's a hardware problem, and they realized it right from delivery, but he wanted to leave right away, and since he was leaving California,
right?
No one else was able to fix all Tesla's other service center are just not ready yet to get the Model 3. They should be by the next 4 weeks, since customers gonna have their car soon. But either problem with having the parts there, or having even just the knowledge if the service techs are not yet trained for Model 3.
Yeah. Curious. Does it show that like on his dashboard or on his screen, does it show that the charge port is open at all times? Like as he's driving down the road, it shows it open? Or
probably, yeah. I didn't get inside his car. I didn't sign up for a test drive, since I already drove the car last summer. I made sure that everybody got a chance to drive it. So I just got in for a second to take a few pictures. but I would assume that if it says it's open, but it's not like the Model S and Model X that, like, if you have an alert, it's always on the instrument cluster, you see it. Since you don't have an instrument cluster, it's only on the center screen, so it's not, I would assume that an alert is not as bad as with Model S and Model X, like, because I had a problem with my trunk for a few weeks back, and that was bothering me because you have the alert right from the instrument cluster for like 5 minutes because the trunk was closed, but it was detecting it open, and that was bothering. But I assume it's not as bad for the Model 3 at that level. Otherwise, the only main complaint he had was, of course, when he was entering Quebec. He was on all season tires, which is basically worthless with the kind of condition we have right now in Quebec. We had a ton of snow, and we have not everywhere we have managed the snow removing very well. He was sliding a lot on the all season tire, and he didn't like also the regenerative braking. So that's a problem with a few people, especially, well, he's pretty used to driving electric at this point, since he's already has two other Model S, but he wasn't used to driving in the snow with his Model S. So same thing for Model 3. So when you have regenerative braking on the snow and your traction is already not good because you don't have great tire, of course you feel that like you're losing control every time you you engage your regenerative braking.
Yeah, you know,
so we put that.
That's a particular problem with BMW i3s because they have such narrow tires. They're basically like motorcycle tires, and they have strong regenerative braking. So basically, every time you let off the accelerator, your back wheels start sliding because you're basically, you know, the brakes are kind of hitting, or maybe not sliding, but you lose your footing. So that's something that takes a while to get used to, or, you know, frankly, you probably should get better tires.
Yeah, for the Model 3, and just like Model S and S, you can put it at low at least, so that's it's not as strong, you easier to control. But once you got to Montreal, a company, don't remember the name right now, but a company in Montreal that does custom tires, custom wheels, actually, they ended up doing a deal with Yo-Yo to as an opportunity to measure the Model 3 for wheels, since they wouldn't have access to a Model 3 for months yet in Canada. So in exchange for giving the car for a few hours to measure for doing custom wheels on Model 3, they gave him a set of custom wheels and winter tires. So he was able to ship his current tires and wheels to a Tesla service center, probably in California. I don't know, maybe in Vancouver, because he wanted to go back to Canada and then go to California directly.
Is he Canadian, or is he from originally?
My understanding is that he's from California and he lives in California, or at least he has a house or an address in California since he took delivery there, and that's why he was one of the earliest. But he lives in the UK. He goes to school in the UK, so that's where he lives right now, which is why actually the plate, it's a Californian car, which is plate in the UK that came in Montreal. So confusing for a lot of people that aren't aware of the story. But that's his plan, actually. He wants to drive back to California, he's still going to hit a few other locations between here and there. And when he gets back to California, he's going to ship the car to the UK in time to go back to school later this month. And then he's even considering doing the same thing, but in Europe later this year.
How's he going to charge that thing in Europe? I guess you could do level 2 pretty easily.
It's going to be a lot. You can use just whatever he's charging like regularly at home. But it's going to be more difficult for a road trip, though. That's for sure. Yeah, I didn't think about
maybe,
that.
Maybe Tesla can give him like an adapter or something.
Yeah, well, that was the other issue too, because at least there's a few CHAdeMO in Europe, not that many, because they're already switching quite fast to CCS, but that was an issue coming down from Quebec City to Montreal. He stopped at Sylvain Juteau Station Électrique in Trois-Rivières, which is a very cool place that Sylvain has. Yeah, right, the set was there last year, and it's a place where they just advertise electric vehicles and have a ton of different charging station, and so Sylvain invited Yo-Yo there with his Model 3, and he thought that he was going to be able to charge at Sylvain DC charger with a CHAdeMO adapter. He keeps CHAdeMO adapter for Tesla's vehicle on play, so you don't need to have one. You can just stop by and use his with his charger. But apparently there's a problem with the Model 3 using the CHAdeMO adapter right now. So Tesla disabled it completely from the Model 3, so you cannot use it with the Model 3 at this point.
Oh, that's good to know.
You have one too, yeah. So don't use your CHAdeMO adapter when you get your Model 3.
I don't plan to.
Yeah. Anyway, normally you can use the supercharger, but that's the thing, because Trois-Rivières is on the north side of the St. Lawrence River. So normally from Quebec City, you could have just driven down the 20, which is on the south shore of the St. Lawrence River, and you have a supercharger right in the middle of Quebec City, Montreal, there at Drummondville. But still, since Sylvain convinced him to go from the north and to go to Trois-Rivières, then he had to stop there to charge with CHAdeMO, and he didn't have any charge. So as it turns out, because normally you should be able to do Quebec City, Montreal on just one full charge. But since he planned to charge at Trois-Rivières, he was probably not full charge at Quebec City when he left. So he was stuck to charge on the level 2 charger at Sylvain Station Electrique. Then he had to go on the SAR charger to the Drummondville supercharger. So that complicated a lot his drive from Quebec City to Montreal. But he finally made it just a few hours late. And people were still pretty happy to see the car. Also thanks to all the electric readers that showed up to say hi. I met a lot of you guys there. Also some podcast listener too. I see Matt is in the room. Matt Obedia, who was there at the event. We met a few of you guys. It was great. And he's still around too. He's going. You can go on his Facebook page, which is Tesla Model 3 Road Trips, and you can follow him there, and try to catch him at another meetup. I'm pretty sure he's leaving Canada through Windsor to Detroit today or tomorrow. So he's gonna be mostly in the U.S. for the next few days until he gets back on the West Coast to go to Vancouver, then back to California. And then maybe you guys in Europe are gonna get a chance to meet him. So what else were we supposed to talk to today?
So we were just
talking about the supercharger network, so we can
charge it. Talk about the Nissan Leaf. 2019 will have over 225 miles of range.
Yeah. That was an interesting report that came out. So Push EVs reported that they were a bit cagey about how they got the information. So they posted a bunch of slides. They didn't say, like, we got that from a source or anything. But Push EVs does that sometime. And in the past, the slides were legit. So I'm pretty sure they have the right information here. So what they claim they have is all the information about the Nissan Leaf 2019, but the Nissan Leaf 2019 is going to be like the next gen Nissan Leaf that came out 2018, but you're going to get they're calling it E Plus option, so you're going to have a faster, longer range, more powerful version. Big difference is a new motor. Instead of a 110 kilowatts electric motor, you're going to get 160 kilowatts. So that's a little bit quicker, but the Nissan Leaf was never known to be a quick car. So you're going like from 8.5 seconds to 6.5. So that's not a big difference. The really big difference is the battery pack. We were talking for months now, if not years, about Nissan releasing a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack to get 200 miles of range. Originally, we thought it was going to be launched with the next gen version in 2017 for the 2018 model year. But as it turns out, it did only release a 40 kilowatt hour pack, so that was disappointing a little bit. But they warned everyone that the 64 kilowatt hour pack was, well, the 60 kilowatt hour pack looks like it's going to be 64 kilowatt hour pack with the usable capacity of 60 kilowatt hours. And they sort of did the inverse of what Tesla did for the Model 3. Tesla went with the highest capacity version first, and then they're going to introduce the lower capacity version. But what we are learning that the difference here is that normally Nissan were using their own battery cell with their they have a subsidiary that does that make lithium battery cells, but they're just not that great. So they ended up selling the company last year, back in August, and now they're switching to LG LG Chem,
which is what batteries. Chevy uses, and a bunch of I think Hyundai uses them as well. So LG Chem is actually kind of like swallowing the whole non-Tesla market.
Yeah, if you look at what new cars are coming to market, more chance than not it's going to be a LG Chem in the battery pack. So those new battery cells are enabling inside the battery pack is over 225 miles of range, 362 kilometers of range on a single charge, which is great. But maybe even more importantly than that, the battery pack apparently now will have a thermal management system.
Huge, because you know the Nissans are notorious for losing over years a lot of their range because theoretically people are charging them and they're getting too hot or too cold during charging, which is depleting the batteries faster than normal. And we can already see like vehicles that do have thermal management, like obviously Teslas and even the Chevy Bolt and Volt, tend to keep their range a lot longer.
Yeah. And also what the other thing is that it facilitates achieving an higher charge rate. And Push EV reports that it could be as much as 100 kilowatts.
Which is so interesting because CHAdeMO, which they're still going to stick with CHAdeMO, only goes up to 50 kilowatts in like almost all instances, although theoretically it can go higher. I believe the Kia Soul EV can actually supposedly charge at 100 kilowatts, but
find the station.
Yeah, where can you even do that?
But did they say that they're going to stick to CHAdeMO? I didn't see that, though.
You know, they didn't, but I got to believe that it since...
Well, they did for the 2018, which was a weird start with, like, if you're launching a new car and you want... Unless you're really just focusing on the Japanese market, because in Japan, you have great coverage with CHAdeMO. Mm-hmm. But outside of Japan, everybody is switching to CCS. And I think in Japan, too, they're switching to CCS. So it's not really future-proof. It's not really future-oriented right now. I would hope that they're going to go CCS with the E-Plus version at least, or just with all version of the model year 2019. That would make sense. But a lot of significant improvement here. They also been talking about the price, but that I'm not so sure because that wasn't in the slide that that Push EVs reported. The slide still says the MSRP is to be announced.
Yeah, you know, like to me, I mean, on here it says 35,000 euros, but to me, so this whole thing, like if you look at this whole package and you compare it to something like the Chevy Bolt or, you know, obviously Tesla, like, it's still not as fast as the Bolt, relatively the same battery capacity as the Bolt that's around right now, fewer miles of range than the Bolt. DC fast charging is faster, but, you know, it's CHAdeMO instead of CCS. Like, you present this whole package to me, which is, you know, a few years off, versus the car that started selling last year, Chevy Bolt. And I'm still going to take the Bolt, and it's, you know, relatively the same price. You know, it's like, it's really frustrating because Nissan obviously was around so much earlier with the Leaf, and they've done almost nothing with it. And, you know, this is absolutely a step up, but it's such a small incremental step up. You know, both the normal version and the E-Plus version are both incremental steps, but like it feels like the industry is passing it by. And you know, we're going to see all these things from theoretically around 2020 from Audi and all these other brands that theoretically will kind of blow this away. So I mean, we're kind of already looking at a low-end EV. Even the E-Plus version is going to be, you know, mediocre.
Well, it sure looks like they're trying to catch up instead of leading the way, that's for sure. It's not, like you said, they're all incremental improvement. They're not like a giant step or anything. And in the chart themselves, because that chart is from Nissan directly, so they are not oblivious to it. So they see that the 2018 next-gen Leaf doesn't compete with the Bolt, doesn't compete with the Model 3 at all. And now the 2019 version with the E Plus that we just talked about, that's their attempt to compete with that. But like you said, I'm not sure either. Like maybe they could compete with the Bolt a little bit, Bolt EV. Model 3 is going to be hard, very hard, especially if that price is right. It's 35 euro. It's going to translate to pretty much the same price as Model 3 or a little under. I think you get a lot more out of the Model 3 than the Leaf.
Yeah, and by 2019, you might actually be able to get your hands on one, like, you know, in a relatively
easy.
Short amount of time. And, you know, who knows what Chevy will have done with the Bolt in 2 years. So,
well, yeah. Yes, GM is supposed to leverage their development of the Bolt platform into other vehicles too. But the form factor is already competitive with the Leaf in terms of the segment with the hatchback and everything.
Yeah, and it's not a horrible design. It's certainly better than the previous Leaf, which had been, you know, since the original. But like,
that's easy. But it's to do better than the previous Leaf.
But it's you know, it's not inspiring. I'd say, like, it's got plenty of room inside. It's definitely modern. But you know, the doors are a little bit, you know, kind of weak, and the flap and the charge port seems a little bit like it's going to fall off. And you know, it's just not exciting, and that's kind of frustrating. I mean, I know a lot of people think the Bolt looks like, you know, some weird little garbage car, but you know, I think it looks fine, and it's actually pretty quick, and you know, like, it's a pretty good car. So
it's a fun car to drive. I have fun driving the Bolt EV, but I can't. That's my problem. Like, I can't wrap my head into, like, here in Canada, it's over $40,000 before incentive.
Right.
I can wrap my head into paying $4,000 for a Chevy like that. It's just,
yeah.
Did you end up leasing yours, or did you buy it all right?
I leased mine, and I got the pretty much everything model for around $300 a month.
Yeah, that's the big thing, I think, in the U.S. Like, a lot of people are doing the IQ, and they're leasing it, and they can get some good deals with leasing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I got a pretty good deal, and, you know, 3 years isn't too long of a time. New York also has an incentive, which covered my, I think it's like...
Cash down?
It's, yeah, $2,500, covered my down payment and, you know, all the expenses, and that goes directly to the dealer. So basically, my first payment on the Bolt at all was the first lease payment of $300, and you know, over 3 years, that's 36 months, 300. You know, do the math; it's really not that much money.
Yeah, we haven't seen like $200. Like, so if you're paying between $200 and $300, and then you account for all the gas saving you get, depending on how much you drive that car, it can make a lot of sense, because you won't see those kind of prices for the Model 3 for a long time, because Tesla is not even leasing those cars right now, because it just doesn't make sense for them. They can sell everything they make right now, so they don't care about leasing it for. I don't want to speculate about when they're gonna start it, but I'm pretty sure that we won't see it until they hit their 5,000 units per week, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's still gonna make a lot of sense. And we saw their delivery, their sales record from last month. So with last month, we got the full year 2017. They ended up delivering over 23,000 of them in 2017, which isn't bad, because it started slow, a lot like Model 3, but they finished the year strong. I think they beat 8 or 9 months consecutively, just beating their sales number. So that car is still selling well, but I think the lease is really keeping it alive, because the sticker shock on it is pretty big for a Chevy, being $40,000 for it before incentive.
Right.
But yeah, that was nice seeing those Nissan Leaf stats this week. Going back to Tesla, yesterday they released a trip planning tool. So if you go inside your model, any of your Teslas right now, you can plan a trip using the Tesla Supercharger. It will tell you where to stop charging, how long you're gonna stop charging, and it's a pretty good tool, because it will even it will take into account the state of charge of your car and tell you, like, you don't have to charge too much at this supercharger, because you're gonna have a better charge rate if your state of charge is lower. So they can route you like that to get the optimal charge time, so you don't lose too much time charging during a long distance road trip. But they took the basis of that tool and made it into a web-based trip planning tool. So you get the similar engine, just not with accounting the state of charge of your car, because it's more the way Tesla described it, it's more of a sales tool, of an educative tool for prospective buyers, because they are only listing the vehicles that are up for sale right now. So the 100D, P100D, 75D, and so forth. So you can use it as a trip planning tool if you're an owner of those current vehicles. But like for someone like me with a P85 or Seth with his 90D Model X, it's not very useful. You're better off just going down to your car and using it to plan the trip. You're gonna do it anyway at some point, since you want the navigation system to know where you're going. So
yeah, and there's also another online web tool called Supercharge.info. That's been around forever, and they even have the upcoming stations and some rumors about that. It's a pretty good tool, but you can actually it uses Google Maps, and you can kind of plan out routes using that thing as well.
Yeah. Well, it's also a good tool to show some people that just don't believe that you can go on road trips with electric vehicles or a Tesla in particular, because they don't like DC. That's fine. They have 300 miles of range, but after that, what do you do? Well, you stop a supercharger. Oh, those take forever. I don't want to stop a supercharger. But then you look at that tool, and it, like I plotted a Montreal to New York City trip. And it gives me just 50 minutes of charging at the supercharger in Queensbury, New York. So that 50 minute in a 7-hour trip, I would stop anyway just to for a restroom break and a bite to eat or something. So it's not inconvenient at all, road trips.
Yeah, no. And I think they might be a little bit optimistic. Like if you show up to a supercharger station and it's totally full, you're not going to get out at the exact time, just charging slows down when every stall is taken. Also in the cold, things slow down a little bit in charging, and also battery usage goes up. But it kind of gives you a good idea of like what to expect. And at the bottom, of the route planning, there's a buy the Tesla button. So I agree with you, and it's clearly marketed towards people who, are trying to figure out, does a Tesla make sense for me? That being said, all the stuff is there to create a tool for owners who are planning trips.
Yeah, that's what I said in an article. I wrote an article too. If they can do that, they can just like make it better for Tesla owners, and something that you can access on the web or directly from the mobile app, from Tesla's mobile app maybe. And then once it's planned, and you can maybe have waypoints too, like a lot of owners have been asking for waypoints, when you, instead of just A to B, you got A to D and stopping at C, B and C. And something that you can plan either web-based on mobile app and then send it to your car. And once you get to your car, then you just start your navigation system. That's a highly requested feature right now. And you were just talking about the cold affecting the charge rate, and as long with other feature. A big article this week that we had that was really popular was was titled "Electric Car Range Are Affected by Extreme Cold, but at least the car start." that was because I was frustrated with a big headline in the Journal de Montreal a week before, or around Christmas. No, I have it right here. No, the 29th of December. So they ran the front page news that electric cars are freezing. That was really the headline, like electric cars are freezing. And then a few page down, so like everybody see the front page, but then they hide the article a few pages down. And the article was based on the experience of a Nissan Leaf owner and a Bolt EV owner, which if you read the article is pretty fair. Like, yeah, they lose some range, but it's it made it almost sound like it gets pretty much useless, or at least you cannot do road trips with them. But to start with, the Nissan Leaf and Double TV are not great road trip cars because they just don't have that fast of charging. They don't have a fast charging. Well, they have fast charging capacity, but they're both limited at 50 kilowatts. So they're not great cars to start with to get a road trip experience. But that was during like extreme cold too in Quebec, and at the same time, like thousands of gas-powered cars were just weren't even starting yet. So to make that the front page of the journal, when we know that gas-powered cars are also affected badly by cold, I think that was pretty pretty low of them to do so. So I wanted to point that out in the article, and I also shared my own experience with a road trip in extreme cold, because a day after that came out in the journal in the Journal de Montreal, I went on the road trip, 300 kilometers road trip, 150 miles each way, and that was minus 25 Celsius when we did that. So that's for your Americans, that's minus 13 Fahrenheit, I think. And to prepare my trip, because normally I wouldn't even think about it, my P85 gets 400 kilometers of range on the full charge, and I got a full charge before starting. And but the thing is, I know I was gonna get a lot less efficient range with the weather, and I was staying just a little over a day at the place where I was staying, a cottage in Laurentide, and I was only gonna charge on 110 volt there. So I wasn't sure exactly how much rain I was able to get at the place. And considering I knew that 150 kilometers will come closer to 200, 220, so both ways, I knew it was going to be close. But they are public charger on the way, just not supercharger, unfortunately. But those are coming soon anyway. And I ended up making the 150 kilometer trips with 220 kilometers of my range. So that's like a 48% higher energy consumption, which isn't great, but I made it easily, but that wasn't never a problem. I ended up gaining 75 kilometers on 110 volt during that day and a half. So that's not bad, because if I was just sitting there without even plugging the car at minus 25, I could have lost up to like 50 kilometers just from sitting there in the extreme cold. But so I was sure I was going to make it back pretty easily. And I ended up still stopping at the Chademo charger just to try it, because I haven't tried my Chademo adapter in months. And I just stopped for 10 minutes. I did about 30 kilometers on the car. But when I got back home, I still had over 100 kilometers of range. So I pretty much didn't even need... I certainly didn't need that 10-minute supercharge, not supercharge, fast charging at the Chademo station. And I barely didn't really need the 75 miles that I got from the 110-volt outlets. But if I wasn't plugged in, then it would have been a problem. Like I said, I probably would have lost another 50 kilometers just from Vampire Drain. So it ended up pretty fine. Though my dad made me remark something after I wrote the article. The elevation is a little bit higher through in Laurentide. I didn't have exactly the elevation from Montreal to the Laurentide, but it's a little bit higher. So, of course, that helped coming back from the trip.
Yeah, so we have kind of a similar experience. It's about the same distance that we go to our ski place in Vermont from New York City, north of New York City area, which is about 180 miles. So maybe not, I don't know.
Yeah, that's even a longer trip.
Yeah, we can make it all the way there in the summer, no problem. And actually the Bolt or the Model X and the Model S before it. But in the winter, because you're going up a hill, it's not possible to get there. So we end up having to stop at a supercharger in Albany, and new ones coming online at Clinton Corners on the Taconic Parkway any day now. So we'll be able to use that. But what we do is we charge while we're at the ski house on a 110. And before we leave, because you're going down the mountain, you want to be able to regen. So you want to heat the batteries so that you have regen. What we do is we turn the heat on and, you know, theoretically heat the batteries up a little bit, which is effective. And it's a net gain, because as soon as you turn the heat on, you lose, you know, 5 miles of range or so. However, because you're only on 110 and it's using more energy than the 110 can shut out to heat the batteries. But as soon as you start going down that hill, you're going to make up 5, 10, 20 miles because, you know, you're going down the side of a mountain. So it's definitely a net gain to heat up before you go. I'm wondering, on your trip, did you use the battery heater, you know, the climate?
Just the yeah, because right now you're only talking about the climate. Did you have the battery preconditioning or just the climate?
Well, so I didn't get the update until recently. Okay. So before that, it was just conditioning the car, which theoretically helps the battery, but.
Yeah, it helps too. Just not as good as with the update. I got the update both on my car and the last version of the app, but I'm still not understanding exactly when they give you the option, because I didn't get it on the trip, and it was -25. Then when I came back like 2 days ago or something, then I got the option at like -15 and gave me the option to click on the on the battery conditioning thing while I had the range lock. You have like the range up here in blue to say it's locked. So I'm not sure exactly how it works. And that's the other thing too. I got some reports from people that saying that the it doesn't work on the PD5. Like they have PD5 and they don't have the option even with both updates. So I have a PD5. And I have to agree, like, it didn't show up the option every time, but it did show one time. So I'm just not sure exactly if they got it down right when you're supposed to use it. I'm not sure. I'm glad also that you mentioned the regen braking, because just yesterday in my car, I had that was the first time that happened. Did you? Because when it's cold, you often get, like, the limit of the regen that it's telling you that you don't have a lot of room to regen, like instead of, I think it goes down to like 60 kilowatts normally, or even 90 kilowatts that you can regen, and instead like it's like at 30 or at 20. Was it ever lock at zero for you? Like they say that you can't regen at all?
Yeah, I've been to zero before. It's not
okay. And is the line like the pointy line at zero, or does it give you an update that says, not an update, but an alert that says at zero? And drive carefully. I got that yesterday.
I got the drive carefully too, yeah.
Okay. So I was weirded out by it, because it was the first time. And again, it wasn't the coldest. Like it was -25 a few days ago. Yesterday when I got that for the first time, was -15. So it wasn't that bad. But then I get into my car and it tells me, you don't have any regen, so be careful. Like, what? Well, and it's right too, because you when you're used to your regen.
Yeah, it's a big change.
Yeah, stop sign is coming. You're like, oh, what's that thing that you need to use? Oh, the brakes are right there. Right,
and theoretically, you're probably driving on ice because it's so cold. So, like, to have no regen and be driving on ice at the same time, it's good to have a
water. Yeah, that was a big surprise, yeah. But, and I drove it, like, only 15 minutes, like, not even that, 10 minutes to the grocery store. I leave it there without any climate control and everything. I go in the grocery store maybe 15 minutes. I come back, then I start the car again, and now I don't have the alert anymore, and I had it for the whole 10 minutes that I drove to the grocery store. So nothing happened with the car. It was just sitting there, and the alert got removed. But like the regen line was like at 1 kilowatt maybe when I got back in, and slowly on the drive back, so just another 10 minutes, it got maybe down to 5 kilowatts or something like that.
Right. So, and you also don't have full power. It's also like when you run your battery really low and you don't have like the full power, you only have like, I want to say like 100 kilowatts of power.
Well, I in my experience, the power limitation is removed quicker than the region,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think that's like first couple of minutes, it's gone.
Yeah, because even then, when I had the no region at all, I had the power limitation that wasn't that big of a limitation, and it was removed completely while I still have the no region at all. Anyway, that no region thing was a first for me that... I even almost felt like I had a problem with the car. I was like, "Oh, what's that?"
You know, and it happens in the other cars. I get the same thing in the Bolt. I think it's just a factor of cold and batteries.
Yeah, it's not ideal. You guys need better software. Yeah, I think we had a problem with our. I'm reading the question right now, and the streaming is not ideal right now. But if you're listening to the audio, it's not a problem, guys. We're sorry about that. We're going to try to figure out a better solution, maybe. Yeah, another problem, too, I had at that meetup on Wednesday. I was charging at a supercharger in Côte Vertu. And I don't know if it was my charge port, the problem, or the supercharger itself, but it kept stop charging. I kept getting the red alert on the charge port ring.
You know, I get that sometimes if I haven't like shoved it all the way in, and sometimes it's because like there'll be some snow or something that's preventing the thing from going all the way in. But you know, it'll go away like the next stop or the next time I plug in. So, you know, I think it's it's a factor of the charge port.
Yeah, I thought it was the same problem too. But I was sure that it was completely in at some point, and maybe it still wasn't. But the cable was also very, very hard. Like, I don't know if it was the cold, since it was like almost minus 20 at that point. And it wasn't very flexible. Like, usually I have some room to play with. So maybe it was just wasn't in, but I unplugged it and plugged it maybe, I'm not kidding, maybe 20 times. And wow. It will work by interval of like 5 minutes, and then it will stop working. But if someone would open the door and close the door, well, that was enough to make it move and stop working. So that was a real bummer. But I don't have the problem somewhere else. So pretty sure it was the supercharger and not my charge port.
Yeah, you know, I had a problem similar, not quite like that, but where the thing would keep stop charging. It was actually in Macedonia, Ohio, on one of our road trips, and I ended up just going to another station, so I just pulled up and went, you know, three stalls over. I don't know if that was what fixed it or if that particular port was bad, but you know, there's a couple different ways to troubleshoot those things.
Yeah. I didn't try to move the car. I probably should have, but there were a lot of people there because of the meetup, and that's also a supercharger station where the TO taxi in Montreal. We have a big fleet of Tesla taxis with the TO taxi fleet, and that's one of the chargers that they stop to charge. So anyway, you can if you want to have more details about that, we posted an article today about it, and we also have a video of it. In the article, the way you get all the all of Yo-Yo's presentation. So if you plan on going on one of his future meetup in the U.S. or in Canada in the next few days, you can check that video to get a pretty good idea of how it works. Because of course you get a few warnings about how to handle the car and how to sit in it and everything, because you don't want like to get too much wear and tear on the car, because he already has hundreds, if not close to 1,000 people sitting in the car in a few days. So that's like almost a taxi level wear and tear on those seats. I know he got some backlash from it, like why is he charging for the test drive and everything, or he's charging too much and everything. But I don't agree with that at all. Like, if you get a new car, like it's a $60,000 car, and he's willing to do that old cross country thing and let people sit in it and everything. I think it's great. I think it's just a great way to promote EVs in general, and especially Tesla in this case.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I took my cars to EV Week meetups, and I really enjoy that. But every once in a while, you'll get a couple people who get in there and they're like, you know, they're adjusting your radio stations and probably farting and the seats and everything. And
you need to be really open to it.
Yeah, it's not easy. Like, I was not comfortable with a lot of the people rummaging through the car. And so I imagine he's probably got, you know, a factor of 100 of that. You know,
also people were like complaining, he's short tempered or everything like that. But the guy's been traveling like 11,000 kilometers in a few days, and that's the big thing with the Montreal event too, because he had a buddy with him all the way through and he was managing the logistic for him and everything. And he instead of continuing the trip with him, he left from Montreal. He took a flight from Montreal back to California. So he was alone at the Model 3 event, and it was easy. I think he's going to be alone for the rest of the trip. So once he get there, he has to like answer everybody's question, then he got to manage people and entering the car and everything. Then he has to log the test drive, because he's taking a lot of data too, and he has to have people sign a waiver also when he's doing a safe drive and everything. So it's a lot of logistical stuff that needs to get taken care of, so give him some slack.
Yeah. All right, we're an hour in. I think we can wrap up today's episode. Just as always, make sure you subscribe if you're not already on your favorite podcast platform. We're even available in the Tesla now, so you can go to the dashboard and tune in and just search up Electrek and you should find us. And, of course, we're always doing this live Fridays, 4 to 5 Eastern U.S. time. And it's always a pleasure.
Yes. Thanks for listening. See you next time.